when I count three, will all of the ladies in the audience please go,
Tab, when I was young, he just was amazing looking. Beautiful California surfer that every single girl or boy would want to make out with.
Mr. Tab Hunter.
He was the embodiment of youthful American masculinity.
He was as big as they could come.
Are you Tab Hunter?
Yeah.
I think I've died and gone to heaven.
Kids and the fans just gravitated to him.
He was the all-American boy, and nobody sold that image better.
How do you shave, Tab?
Well, the Gillette Super Speed, of course.
What do you like about Tab Hunter?
Well, quite a few things.
Don't you ever think about marrying?
All the time, Ernie. That's what keeps me single. Hello, I'm Tab Hunter, and I've got a secret.
I would go out occasionally to a cocktail party.
Parties like this were illegal.
And then next thing I know, the cops came in. I had no idea it was going to jump up and be thrown at me years later. I was offered the 7-year contract with Warner Brothers.
Whoa!
He was everywhere.
Tony and I met at the pool at the Chateau Marmont. We just kind of hit it off. And I went up to his room with him.
And he wasn't after me, so he wasn't on the make. And women like that.
John Waters called me up on the telephone and said, how would you feel about kissing a 300-pound transvestite? I'm sure I've kissed a hell of a lot worse.
Every actor who has a secret like being gay, there's a part of us that are afraid to be who we are.
Well, I would never have talked about my personal life in the 1950s. I think you have to be true to yourself. I've never been as open as I am with you.
Are you ready for a snowstorm of global proportion? Yes, over 6 feet of snow has just hit your podcast experience. And here he is, Nicholas Snow.
Hello, everybody. This is my fourth decade, not a total of four, but I'm in my fourth decade of being an openly gay person in the media. And I couldn't be more delighted that in this episode, I get to interview someone who has quite a different perspective. Yes, Hollywood's all-American boy had a secret. Hollywood legend Tab Hunter is dropping by the show today to discuss a Hollywood life lived in the closet. The subject of a new documentary, Tab Hunter Confidential. This podcast is going out live on November 11th, 2015 at 3 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. But the film is rolling out across the country, and based upon the ability we have to distribute media today, the film is going to be available worldwide. And you can find the life and times of this film and follow it at tabhunterconfidential.com. I'm going to be back with Mr. Hunter in just a minute. On a different note, if you're hearing this podcast before November 12th, Thursday, November 12th, 2015, on that date, I'm giving a sneak giveaway of my Living Powerfully with HIV memoir. It's called Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart. I'm giving away a sneak giveaway via Kindle or use of the Kindle app from any device worldwide on Thursday the 12th. And I'm doing this so you guys will all download my book and promote a more important giveaway December 1st through the 5th, 2015, in honor of World AIDS Day. I'm giving my book away worldwide to any device that has a Kindle app, and I want people to know about that. So in just a couple of minutes, I'm going to be back with Mr. Tab Hunter, and I could not be more delighted. And you're going to want to stay tuned because this is one inspiring man with a really powerful story.
The snowstorm continues after this.
Spotlight on Palm Springs.
Come to Lulu, the award-winning California bistro. Fabulous breakfast, a luscious three-course Sunday brunch. Rumptious dinners serving fresh fish, perfect steaks, pizzas, salads, and more. Something for everyone. A three-course special to savor from $15.99. The best all-day and night happy hour. There's always a party at Lulu in the heart of downtown Palm Springs on South Palm Canyon and Arenas.
Hi. I'm Nicholas Snow.
Many of you know that I am HIV positive. I'm living powerfully with HIV because I benefit from the services of the Desert AIDS Project in Palm Springs, California, and I'm very happy to bring you this news from another grateful client of Desert AIDS Project.
I'm more proactive with my health now, I think, than I was before. And I think that's because there's other people that are being proactive with me. You know, there's people that are interested and concerned about it.
A lot of services that are very difficult to access to HIV-infected patients are gathered within one roof. We do have access to substance abuse counselor, mental health services, psychiatrists. We have dental service programs. We have nutritional programs, housing, case management. Very unique in the nation that all the programs, including medical services, are administered within one facility.
Coming here, I felt just an amazing amount of love from Desert AIDS Project. They are people who just care in the community, people who want to put a hand out and say, let me hold yours. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
For more information, visit desertaidsproject.org.
And now, on with the show. He's a regular contributor to the Huffington Post and to media outlets throughout the world. He's an author, singer, songwriter, actor, and activist, and the executive producer and host of NicholasSnow.tv. He has created and continues to do so a snowstorm of global proportions dedicated to connecting the circuitry of humanity. And now, drifting into the studio and your life once again, Nicholas Snow.
Welcome, everyone. Throughout the 1950s, Tab Hunter reigned as Hollywood's ultimate male heartthrob. In dozens of films and in the pages of countless movie magazines, Tab's astonishing looks and golden boy sex appeal drove his fans to screaming delirious frenzy, making him the prototype for all young matinee idols to come. Bristling against being just another pretty face and wanting to be taken seriously, Tab was one of the few to be able to transcend pinup boy status. He earned his stripes as an actor to become a major movie star and recording artist, but throughout his years of stardom, Tab had a secret. Tab Hunter was and is gay. He spent his Hollywood years in a precarious closet that repeatedly threatened to implode and destroy him. Now Tab's dramatic, turbulent, and ultimately inspiring life story has become an explosive documentary feature directed by Emmy Award-winning filmmaker Jeffrey Swartz. The film has the unique advantage of exclusive, unprecedented access to Tab Hunter himself, who shares firsthand for the first time what it was like to be a studio manufactured a movie star during the golden age of Hollywood, and the consequences of being someone totally different from his studio manufactured image. If you happen to be one of my local followers, where I'm based in Palm Springs, although I do have a worldwide audience, I want to let you know that there's a special benefit or advanced screening benefit of this film. The beneficiary is Desert AIDS Project. The film will be screening at the Camelot Theaters Thursday, November 12th. There are limited VIP tickets available, including a pre-film reception with the star. I'm going to be there, and I can't wait to see it. But with us now is Mr. Tab Hunter. Welcome to the show, Mr. Hunter, and thank you so much for joining us.
Well, Nicholas, thank you very much, and I just want to commend you on all the work you're doing for AIDS. I think that's amazing. That's really wonderful, quite wonderful.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. You know, one of the things I like to say is really I think that none of us can accomplish anything without each other. I think fundamentally that that's a great lesson of life. Would you agree?
I think it's very important, absolutely, without a doubt. You know, I look at the Hollywood years, when I look back at all that, I just think somehow I look at that as my past life. It was wonderful while it was happening because I was a kid, and when you're a kid, you think you're bulletproof, but you're not, you know.
Well, one of the things I'm so happy about for you is that, frankly, for any member of the LGBT community today and our allies and even those that still fear and fight us, I am so glad that we're living in a world today where the closet is shrinking as quickly as it is, and more people do have their civil rights and civil liberties as we move forward. And I'm wondering, did you ever imagine that you would live in a United States of America that had national federal marriage equality?
Well, that's quite wonderful. It really is. You know, I'm a very private person. I was brought up that way, and so I had a wonderful, strong, religious German mother who said nothing for show. And what happened? I wound up in show business. And I've got to tell you, it was a wonderful time of my life, but also was very frightening. I was every free minute when I wasn't in Hollywood, I was out with my horses because they were my touch of reality in that really unrealistic world of Hollywood. I felt closest to God with a pitchfork full of crap in my hands from out of the barn, more ever so than being around the Hollywood hoopla. But I did love it, and I love the work.
Well, and I love how your reconnection with your own authenticity allowed you to have a whole resurgence in your career, especially working with John Waters. And I think that there's a lot of things that you kind of gave yourself permission to do as you got older. And I'm wondering, was there some sort of turning point that helped you take on these edgier roles that got closer to the edge of the closet?
Not really at all. In fact, I look at the closet thing, it's very funny. When we were back in New York recently, and the picture just opened theatrically there, someone from the newspaper said to my partner, Alan, how did you get this done? How did you get him to do it after the book? And he said, well, it took a long time. He said, but Tab stepped out of the closet, did the documentary, turned around, went back in, and closed the door behind him. And that, in a way, is sort of my life, because I'm not blah, blah right out there in your face, but this is the journey, and we are all on a journey. And the most important thing is to make it the best journey that we possibly can, mentally, physically, and number one, spiritually. And that's what it's all about for me today.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that could be I agree 100%. One of the things, I just watched the film today, and I look forward to seeing it on the big screen. But one of the things that I want to say for my listeners is that your journey out of the closet is part of this film, but I think on a greater level, it talks about just the Hollywood machine and an individual's desire to find their true self. And I think anyone that is on a journey to find themselves and have a self-actualized life can get a lot out of this film. Even though this is a gay-themed film on some levels, I wouldn't call it a gay film. I would call it an inspirational story of a man who evolves.
Nicholas, I'm really glad you said that, because I firmly believe that. We are all on a journey. And that's what's important. Make it the best we possibly can. Unfortunately, in our society, an awful lot of people want to go in your, blah, 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 and let it all hang out. But I've never been that kind of a person, so it was very difficult. But each individual has to find what's right for their development, for their growth. And that is what is important. And, we've got to be positive about it, because there's so much negativity in the world today, and I don't want that to be a part of my life. I think none of us should. We should look somewhere under the pile of crap. There is a pony, and we got to believe that.
Now, have you married your partner, or do you have any desire to do so?
No, I keep asking him, but he keeps turning me down. Look, the marriage is, to me, it's a very, very personal thing. It's a man and a woman and a man and a woman and their maker. And that is between them. That's my belief, and I think that's a wonderful thing, because it's such a beautiful private thing. And if people want to just spread their love around, that's fine. I love what my dear friend Mother Dolores Hart said when we had our screening in Connecticut. She said, I want to tell you in the audience this. There is no hetero, there is no homo, there is only love. And I thought, wow, Mother Dolores, that's great. I used to date her when she was a movie star.
which is a whole other movie, I'm sure. Well, again, an example of someone that evolved on their own spiritual path and found out.
You're absolutely right.
Truly important for them. Now, the studios yielded a lot of power in the 1950s in a way that they could keep the closet door tightly shut, and they yielded influence. And one of the surprising things for me about seeing your film is that at no point in the film does it ever reveal that you ever felt isolated or alone or cut off or oppressed. That does not come out. I mean, clearly you were because of the world that you were living in. But what I want to know is, emotionally, was it a sad and lonely and challenging time?
It's difficult for a lot of young people that have that inner turmoil. And my touch of reality, as I said, were running out to the barn with my horses and my horse friends, because Hollywood was a business. And, you know, some studios knew about their actors and actresses that were gay, which, and by the way, the word wasn't around then, and other studios didn't. Warner Brothers never said a word to me at all. But I was doing my job as an actor, and they employed me. And if I didn't do as they asked me to do, I'd be out and someone else would be in. It was a very different business than today. You know, those moguls, Jack Warner at Warner Brothers, Harry Cohn at Columbia, Daryl Zanuck at Fox, Louis B. Mayer at MGM, they ran tight ships. It was the end of the studio system, which was amazing to be even a part of that, because it's such a different institution now.
Before we continue, I want to talk about two of the key people on your film and in your life. Of course, there is your partner, Alan Glazer, who's the producer. He began his Hollywood career while a student at the University of Southern California. Starting as an intern at 20th Century Fox, he quickly became a producer, working in the studio for half a decade. While at Fox, he met you, and you two partnered up to form Glazer Hunter Productions, and you've produced a variety of products, including the feature films Lust in the Dust and Dark Horse, and several television series. And Jeffrey Swartz is an Emmy Award-winning filmmaker based in Los Angeles. His featured documentaries include the Emmy Award-winning HBO documentary films Vito, about the beloved gay activist and author of The Celluloid Closet. Previous works include I Am Divine, A Portrait of the International Drag Superstar, and John Waters' Leading Lady, as well as Spine Tingler, The William Castle Story, and Wrangler, Anatomy of an Icon. I'm wondering how long have you and Alan known Jeffrey?
Well, Alan, Jeffrey and Alan, we got together and did his show, I Am Divine, a little bit. And, you know, he asked us to do an interview. And then later, Alan said to me, you know, I want to do your book as a documentary. I think Jeffrey would be ideal to be the director on that. So I thought, really? Well, you know, okay, whatever you think. And he and Jeffrey worked very closely. Jeffrey's a good director, and Alan knew exactly what he wanted, and he's a very fine producer. So I'm just really pleased with the outcome of the documentary. But that's how that came about. So I was thrilled when Alan approached Jeffrey to become a part of the documentary he wanted to do.
Well, I'm just thrilled as well, because I think it's got a lot to say. I'm going to take a quick break, Mr. Hunter, and when I come back, I'm going to ask you about the double standard of coverage of gay people and heterosexual people in Hollywood today, in addition to more about Tab Hunter Confidential after this.
Everything Nicholas Snow is available at NicholasSnow.com. For our video programming, check out NicholasSnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. The snowstorm continues after this.
New design. designer furnishings, sparkling cocktail rings, vintage jeans and shirts for moms, teens, boys, and flirts. Area rugs and stylish bedding design your wedding. Shiny knickknacks and glam Hollywood throwbacks. You'll find it here at Revival. Voted best of the Valley thrift stores. Now with even more new treasures, plus one-of-a-kind consignment and estate items. Fashion, accessories, furniture, it's all in store at Revival. Find it here. Visit us at revivalstores.com to find a Revival store near you.
Hey folks, mark your calendars for early November because it's time for Greater Palm Springs Pride, Southern California's popular and longest-running LGBT festival in the Coachella Valley. Palm Canyon Drive is closed to traffic and transformed into a vibrant, pedestrian-friendly Pride festival unique to Southern California. Palm Springs Pride is also one of the sponsoring organizations of the annual Harvey Milk Diversity Breakfast, which takes place every year in May. Visit pspride.org.
The LGBT Community Center of the Desert is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enriching the lives of the LGBT community in the Valley through health and wellness, social and educational programs. The center advances its mission through a clinical counseling and internship program, senior programming, youth anti-bullying and suicide prevention support programs, a growing volunteer program, and signature special events in the community for its members and allies. For more information on the LGBT Community Center, visit them on the web at thecenterps.org.
I tell you, the paparazzi heard Mr. Hunter was going to be on the show today, and they will not leave us alone. During the break, you heard about Palm Springs Pride. Greater Palm Springs Pride Weekend just happened for 2015. It's become the largest LGBT Pride Festival in Southern California. I have a lot of really fun viral videos of the event on my public Facebook page, nicholassnow.com. And now that you know this fascinating sort of interview style that can sometimes happen on my show, if you want to submit people to my show, you just go to nicholassnow.com for that. Without further ado, for the home stretch of our interview, I want to bring back Mr. Hunter to the show. Welcome back.
Thank you very much.
One of the things, before I get into the topics I teased before the break, I'd like to know your relationship with other major stars is revealed. You go into your romantic connection with the late, great Tony Perkins, and there's some mention of Rock Hudson. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you, since it doesn't really explore it a lot in the film, is when and how did you know Rock Hudson? Did you know him well, and were you part of each other's sort of underground gay experience in Hollywood?
Not at all. Rock had the same agent I had, Henry Wilson. My good friend Dick Clayton, who discovered me at a stable when I was a stable boy about 15 years old, he eventually, when I got out of the Coast Guard for being underage, introduced me to an agent, Henry Wilson. And Henry had Rory Calhoun, Guy Madison, Rock Hudson, and so forth. And it was Henry and Dick that came up with, well, we got to tab you something, so they named me Tab. And I showed horses, hunters and jumpers, so they called me Tab Hunter as opposed to Tab Jumper. As far as Rock, I met him occasionally. I'd see him at the office. He did live up the street from where I did in Beverly Hills, and I really felt terrible when I found that they had AIDS. And I remember George Maharis and I going to visit him in the hospital at UCLA. That was just dreadful. But it was a shock to the world, just so sad.
So
I knew
you
Rock
were
only just a little bit socially, but not a great deal, and I knew him before and after he married Phyllis.
Tell me who George Maharis is.
George Maharis was an actor who, I believe he did a show called 77 Sunset, no, not 77 Sunset Strip, something, oh gosh, I can't remember, but a big television
show. I'll look it up on IMDb while we're talking, but one of the things that there's a sort of a mysterious contradiction in what you've said. So,
oh, yeah?
You've said that you didn't know Rock well, but you knew him well enough to have access to him in the hospital when everyone in the world wanted to talk to him and know more about what was going on with him.
Well, he was a neighbor of mine. He lived right up the street. And if George Maharis said, I'm going to visit, George called me and said, I'm going to visit Rock. I said, I'd love to go and see him and talk with him.
Well, I think it's a compliment to the type of relationship that you do have, even though it was casual, that you were able to offer him comfort and support at that time.
I think that's very important. We have to do that with people. We have to reach out to people. People don't always do that. You know, it's very, very important. It's an important part of our lives, you know. And that's I feel that's very missing in people today. They get so busy texting and doing all this ridiculous stuff that they don't communicate. Communication is a very important part of our journey.
I agree with you. You know, the theme of my show, and I would like to think of my life, is connecting the circuitry of humanity. And I think that the way that we
there
do
you
that
go.
Is we find individual ways to express our truth in a way that hopefully makes a difference. Do you have a sense that your documentary can change lives?
I don't know. It depends on the individual. Everyone will get something different from it. That's what's important. I think, you know, people are afraid to touch other people, to touch, you know, deeply and communicate. And I think that's something we must do. Our society has gotten so me, I, and, you know, we've got to get back to the very important basics.
Very well stated. As you have witnessed sort of the dismantling of the Hollywood closet over the last couple of decades, have you had conversations with people? You don't have to name anyone, but have you had any conversations with people about when you think that it might be economically indifferent if a leading man would come out of the closet? Do you think we're ever going to see a time in Hollywood where a leading man can be a leading man playing any kind of role, regardless if he happens to be a gay man?
I don't know about that. I really don't. You know, I don't know much about Hollywood today. I always look at my time as an actor as my past life. But I do think it is difficult. It was difficult. You know, I would never have come out because I'm just not that kind of a person back in those days. And today, I just did it because, well, this is my journey, and I wanted to share it with people. But I think if you're a leading man in Hollywood, you're not going to have the opportunities. You're not going to be a leading man in Hollywood today if you do come out. It's unfortunate to say that, but I do believe that's true. These people put all this money into a film, and they want what they want. They don't think that people are going to buy that. You know, who knows what their thoughts are? I can't comment on that, but I certainly don't see it around. You know, you can see gay characters on screen, comedians, best friend of, and so forth, or the young kid, Matt Bomer, I guess his name is.
Yes, Matt Bomer.
Does television and things, but he's not a real Hollywood leading man, I don't think. I don't really know. I don't know the industry today. I don't, but it just seems that they are not allowing that to be as they didn't when I was doing films.
When I was in college, and one of the things that sort of politicized me and compelled me to come out was the fact that it was in the early 80s. We were learning about the AIDS epidemic, and people I knew were dying, and ACT UP emerged, and a battle cry of ACT UP was silence equals death. And another sort of response to that was action equals life. And what I got out of that is I sort of decided that to the extent that I withhold my knowledge or enlightenment about a particular topic is equal to the extent that I'm promoting the continuation of ignorance about that topic. So if my neighbor down the street has a false view of a person, place, or thing, and I know that to be false, and I have some way of communicating and educating them, and I don't, am I responsible for their ongoing ignorance? So that's kind of the premise that I pitch to people. When I ask them, do they think that a superstar with more money than they ever could spend chooses, as is their right, to stay in the closet, do you think that person's closet is somehow perpetuating the continued massacre of gays in a developing nation with a religious fundamentalist base? Do you think there's any connection between those two things?
That depends on the individual. And my mother said something she said a lot of interesting things. She was very difficult, but very wonderful and loving in many, many ways. She said, please remember this, Arthur, because she's the only person who called me Arthur. The masses are asses, she used to say. The other thing she used to say is elevate your thinking. So those are the two things that I go by, a lot of those things that are very important that are going to lift the person, lift the individual. If people, there are so many people that just don't, they're not open and receptive to things. They're very closed-minded. I do believe there's an order to life. And I'm not a great one just saying, well, I am who I am and this is how I have to be. Some people it works for. Other people it doesn't. We have to respect the individual, but we all must be lifting our thinking.
You answered that so brilliantly. I have so much respect for your grasp on that particular issue. In the film, we learned that your agent had a choice of you wanted to. There was a conflict with an agent, and he basically threw you under the bus and leaked information to a tabloid. And a previous arrest was reported, and it made mention that you were at a limp-wristed party and got arrested.
No. That was the spin on what happened by the writer who wrote that when I was thrown under the bus. What happened when it actually happened was I was like a 17-year-old kid discharged from the service of being underage. A friend of mine said, want to go to a party? I said, yeah, great. I mean, when you're 17, what kid wouldn't want to go to a party? I walked in, saw a bunch of guys dancing with a bunch of guys, a bunch of gals dancing with a bunch of gals. I thought, oh, it's one of those parties. I went to the refrigerator and bingo, the cops, to look for food, and bingo, the cops walked in. That's exactly what it was. But the spin they put on it was that it was a limp-wristed pajama party, which is a bunch of BS. People always want to, they want to just put their own spin on things, and that is such nonsense. But that's how people are. Accept things the way they are, not the way you want them to be.
One of the things that fascinates me about the story is that further on in your life, when this information is leaked to a tabloid, you're very entrenched with Warner Brothers Studios, and they're working to preserve your career, and you go to the Academy Awards with Natalie Wood as part of the publicity machine to respond to that. And I know you were friends with Natalie Wood, but I was wondering, on that night privately or at any point privately, did you ever talk to Natalie about whether or not about your sexuality? Were you close enough that she knew that there was some sort of secrets swirling around you?
I never talked to anybody about. The only person I could talk to, I had one person when I had real problems. I would talk to my friend Dick Clayton, who later became my agent. Dick Clayton was the agent for Jimmy Dean, Jane Fonda, Burt Reynolds, Angie Dickinson. He was just a great human being. And if I had a problem in the world, I could discuss it with Dick Clayton. But I would never discuss my sexuality with anyone in the business. No way, shape, or form. Natalie was fabulous. She was much younger than me, and she was like my kid's sister. I loved Nat. Just like I loved Debbie Reynolds, for gosh sakes. Deb, I knew when she was, just out of high school, out of Burbank High School, where she played the French horn in the band. Warner Brothers put her under contract. They dropped her, and she went to MGM, where she became a huge star. And Debbie and I used to go out all the time. We used to go to the burlesque show in downtown L.A. once a week and think, wow, we're really racy doing this. I mean, she was great fun. She was a lot of fun and still is to this day.
One of the people that you're friends with who's featured in the film is Portia de Rossi. We love her, and of course her wife Ellen, and I'm wondering, do you get to socialize with them much?
Not really, but Portia's a lovely horsewoman, loves the horses, and that's where I really knew her, was out with the horses. She was training with a good trainer friend of mine in the Valley. And of course I know Ellen slightly. I think she's great. I love her. But I'm a little closer to Ellen's mother. I'm an old man. I'm 84 years old, for God's sakes. Anyway, Betty DeGeneres is just fabulous, and we see her on occasion. But she doesn't live up here in Santa Barbara any longer.
I worked with Betty for many years, not in the same department.
Oh, she's great. She's great.
At Cedars-Sinai Medical Center, and she is fantastic. You've been so generous to let me ask whatever I want, and I want to be equally gracious, and I want to give you 5 or 10 minutes to tell me anything that you think is really important for the public to know about this movie.
It's just, I look at it as a journey. It could have been just Hollywood, which would have been pretty boring. It's my, the younger years, the Hollywood years, and these golden years. I've been very fortunate to have a wonderful, wonderful relationship with Alan Glasser over these years, 30-some years. And I thank God that he's done such a great job with this by hiring Jeffrey and working so close with him on the documentary. And I hope people get a little something from it. You know, it's all about extending our hands to each other and to elevating our thinking and to just saying, look, this is the journey. And where are we going? And being grateful.
One of the things that I want the listeners to know as well, that the people that the individuals that go on camera as opposed to archival footage, the people that go on camera for new footage in your film include Clint Eastwood, Noah Wiley, Portia de Rossi, as I mentioned, Debbie Reynolds, Robert Wagner, Connie Stevens, Lenny Kazan, George Takei, John Waters, and more. It's really quite wonderful that all of these people would offer particular perspectives of
well, they're all quite wonderful people. For example, you know, just having them as to say what they did was very touching to me. Very touching.
The Los Angeles Times says, as about your film, as engaging and unfussy as its star, the film remains an evocative, enjoyable ride. And IndieWire, the playlist, says that your film is fun and gossipy in the way that great documentaries about Hollywood often are, but it also speaks to a deeper truth about identity and perseverance and the large divide between one's personal and professional life. That's what I love about the life you're living today, at least what I know of it from what you have been so generous to share, is that I don't think that there's anything that's really compartmentalized about your life. I mean, you have a public life and a private life, but there aren't any secrets. It's like people know you're gay, but that doesn't mean that you have to have a public life. You're not hiding anything.
It doesn't mean you have to wear it as a label either. I think you just do what you have to do. You know, it just depends on the individual. Every body is different. You know, people want to label people too much. The first line in my book is, I hate labels. I think the important thing is that we are all human beings, and we have to realize, yes, but what kind of a human being are you? Now, that is important.
That's brilliant, and I have to agree with you around the labels. I think they're important in, as part of the process of creating equality. But as the result,
no, that is to agree. I know exactly what you're saying.
But because we've had a lot of progress, I think that what people are seeing is that we are, in fact, all just people. I had the honor to be on staff with all kinds of people around the country on the first National Coming Out Day in 1988. And the whole premise is take your next step. Take your next step in being who you are and following your path.
Exactly.
And living your life.
Being who you are, exactly.
And you certainly are accomplishing that. Is there?
Well, I think, I've had a very, very incredible trip. This journey has been fabulous. A lot of highs, a lot of lows, and I can't forget. It must be a lot of thank yous.
I completely agree with you. I think that none of us would accomplish anything without the other.
No, good point.
One of the pieces of trivia that I was fascinated to learn about your film is that you were with Warner Brothers as an actor, and you ended up recording a song with a record label, and you went to number one and knocked Elvis off the charts. And Warner Brothers was extremely upset with you, and rather than accept the argument that they had no record label, they started one just to be able to put your records out.
Well, that's true. Randy Wood of Dot Records. Dot was huge. You know, Pat Boone. I mean, so many major stars there. Well, Randy wanted me to record for him. He heard me sing and presented me with Young Love. It knocked Elvis out of the number one slot. I stayed up there for about 6.5 weeks. We used his backup singers, the Jordanaires. He wasn't too happy about that. And I then started recording an album, and Jack Warner called me in his office and said, "Whoa, wait a minute. We own you for everything." I said, "But Mr. Warner, you don't have a recording company." He looked at me and he said, "Well, we do now." And they started Warner Brothers Records. And that's how that, and then I started recording for Warner Brothers.
Well, you have had a really exciting career. And I'm really grateful to you that you took the opportunity at one point in your life to share things that really only you could have shared, and you chose to. And that's a great gift to the world. I do look forward to shaking your hand on Thursday night.
Please come over and introduce yourself, because, you know, there are going to be a lot of people. I'm very excited we're coming down for such a good cause and such a wonderful time to be a part of that. But please do come over.
One of the things that because we do have a couple more minutes left, you were very close to your mom, and it's revealed in the film that your mom was diagnosed with mental illness. And in response to that, you did a public service announcement. What decade was that?
Oh, God, I don't know. The Dark Ages.
Well, it was
a long time ago. It was so difficult having to commit my mother. It was just a terrible thing to have to go through. But, you know, good, and that's all part of our journeys, the highs and the lows, and we just got to, you know, somewhere, we've got to be positive about our journey. We've got to be positive. I'm sick and tired of the negativity. I just think we, you know, it's onward and upward.
I think a takeaway from this is that at that point in your life, there was a huge amount of stigma about mental illness, and there still is today.
There
at
was.
That point in your life, there was a tremendous amount of oppression and stigma around the issue of homosexuality, and that term doesn't even get used very often. And around both of those issues and so many issues, people, one after another, like you, make a choice to step up and, as they are ready, express their souls on a deeper, more expansive level, and we have a different world because of it.
Oh, that's very nice of you to say. It really is, but we have to do what we have to do.
Well, I am so delighted that I consider this a highlight of my career as a journalist and as just a human being, and I'm honored that you took the time to be on the show. You're welcome back anytime, and as are your friends and colleagues.
Oh, Nicholas, thank you very much, and please come on over. Look forward to seeing you. Look forward to our experience down there in Palm Springs.
Thank you so much, and I'll make sure that this podcast gets blasted out into the internet, as they say, and you have a wonderful day, and give your lovely partner my regards.
I will. God bless, and thank you very much.
You too. Thank you. I've had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Tab Hunter. I hope I was respectful in the way I conducted the interview, and I have to tell you, he's a wonderful man. You know, if you think of your parents, my great stepfather is almost the precise age as Mr. Tab Hunter. And I can't wait to tell my stepfather that I just interviewed Tab Hunter, because I think he'd find this interview to be fascinating. At any rate, you can follow TabHunterConfidential.com for more information about the film. Go to NicholasSnow.com for more information about me. As mentioned, if you're hearing this before November 12, 2015, I'm doing a sneak free download via Kindle or the Kindle app to any device worldwide of my book. Go to lifepositivebook.com. It takes you right to the Amazon's book page. And worldwide, December 1st through the 5th, 2015, I'm giving the same book away, Life Positive, A Journey to the Center of My Heart, that embodies a lot of the themes and philosophies that Mr. Hunter and I discussed in one way or another. With that, I want to thank you for listening to what I think is one of the most fascinating episodes of my show thus far, and I hope you agree.
We are, in fact, connecting the circuitry of humanity. All of us connected. Please continue to connect with Nicholas Snow on Facebook, Twitter, Periscope, Instagram, Google+, and other social networks. Everything Nicholas Snow is available at nicholassnow.com. For our video programming, check out nicholassnow.tv. Please subscribe to the show for free at iTunes or by downloading a podcast app from your favorite app store. This program is produced and copyrighted by Nicholas Snow Productions, LLC. Thank you for being a part of the snowstorm. We are honored by your presence.